The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Welcome to the Financial Focus Radio Show with your hosts, Tyler Simonis and Josh Finelli. Join us as we discuss markets, bring transparency to issues within the financial services industry, and bring honest, thoughtful analysis every week.
Good morning, everybody. Happy 4th of July. Happy birthday, America. 250 years old. I know that because, it's everywhere, but I was born in 1976, which was America's 200th birthday. So maybe I'll make it to the 300th birthday with all the advances in medicine that we have now. Get on the Ozempic and any other pill that they're going to have out there to extend longevity.
You're going to take the oral version?
Of Ozempic?
Yeah.
Sure. No, I'm still on the I'm going to work out and eat right program, but maybe when I hit 60, I'll go right straight to the drugs. All right, so I hope everybody has a happy and safe 4th of July. Josh will be out there on his e-bike on the Freedom Ride in the front with his rainbow flag, cheering everybody on.
bought my fireworks in Spring Tucky when I was...
Fireworks are illegal now in Bend. You hear that, police? You want me to give them your address so they can come confiscate your illegal fireworks?
I just got sparklers.
If we have a forest fire that starts on your part of the Butte, I am sending everybody up there. All right. If you'd like to be part of the show, you have a question or comment for us, give us a call, 877-670-7117, or email us by going to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Let us talk about the week that was in the capital markets. Josh, we did an e-news last week, and Josh described us as market nerds. And the camera wasn't on me, but I was laughing pretty hard because that summarizes Josh and I. We get more excited about these dorky moves in markets than I think anybody else out there. But that's why we do what we do. The U.S. stock market, as measured by the S&P 500, traded up by 1.5%, and it is proof that 493 other companies in the S&P 500 can make the market go higher. And we're going to talk some more about that in a second. In the small cap universe, so the Russell 2000 traded down by 0.5%. And so maybe this idea that we might have higher rates started to affect small caps. We will see. Time will tell. International developed market stocks traded up by 1.5%. So think Western Europe, Japan, those kind of countries. And then in the emerging markets, we saw yet another sell-off. EM stocks were down 3.25%, mostly due to Korean chip makers. I guess question still is looming out there with semiconductors, and that is really punishing those Korean. I mean, that market is driven by a couple stocks.
Yeah, memory stocks, really.
And so we saw EM stocks sell off. In the bond market, the aggregate bond index traded down by 0.6%, which meant yields moved higher. The yield on a one-year treasury, 3.95%, a 10-year, 4.47%, and a 30-year, 4.97%. So the 10-year and the 30-year got very close to those numbers where it seems to matter, the 10-year at 4.5% and the 30-year at 5%, where they can sort of compete for investment dollars. I think really when the 10-year, if it got to 5%, that would really compete for investment dollars, but we're a ways away from that. Right now, gold was 2.3% higher at $41.39 an ounce, and oil continues its sell-off. Oil was down 6% at $67.68 a barrel. So that's certainly good news for the American consumer that oil continues to head lower. The big news last week was, which just made the Fed's job much harder, was the June jobs report for the U.S. economy. Last month, the U.S. economy added 57,000 jobs, which was about half of expectations. The unemployment rate, though, did dip to 4.2%, and that was based mostly on a drop in labor force participation.
I mean, I feel like it was a Goldilocks number, though, because don't you think that if we had had a hot hot payrolls number, then, you know, hikes would be in play. So stocks probably would have sold off if we got a good jobs number.
Well, we also got the prior 2 months revised down by 40,000. So when you look at the labor...
That's like consistent with the last few years where the revisions come in after seemingly no one cares.
I mean, the labor market... So we were starting to feel like the labor market growth was good, and maybe it's not been as good as we originally had thought. So I would just say the report, if I'm a Fed governor, does not make my job easier. It illustrates when they say they are data dependent, that proves that they absolutely have to be data dependent. I mean, to me, if Kevin Warsh keeps saying what he says, which is they really care about getting, you know, price stability under control and inflation under control, when it's double their mandate, you sort of, the only solution to that, Kevin, is to raise rates. I don't know that inflation is going to roll over on its own. It's hard for me to imagine getting from where we are now to the mandate on its own. I just don't see that scenario short of a recession or a significant slowdown in the U.S. economy.
The earliest meeting it's probably in play, though, is September. I mean,
I don't think they do anything till October based on this report.
July is like, I looked on Polymarket, it was 87% chance that they hold firm on rates.
So. Yeah, I don't think they do anything the next two, unless we get an inflation print that's way out of whack. They, you know, really high, they'll do something in September, but otherwise, I think the soonest they'll probably hike is October. But, you know, I want to, if the Fed wants credibility, we sort of have to take them at their word. And, you know, I think maybe Kevin Warsh can go down as the guy that finally tamed this in COVID era inflation. We also get the S&P 500 or S&P Case-Shiller 20 City Home Price Index. So it's just the biggest metropolitan areas around the country. That index grew by 1.1%. The data is really old. This is the month of April. The data on this is always a couple months late. But it was really fragmented. We saw cities like Chicago, their housing market up 6.5%, while cities in the Sun Belt and Western states saw declines. The one thing about the housing market, this housing market remains the least affordable housing market in U.S. history. And, you know, we'll see what ultimately makes that change, but it doesn't seem anything is on the horizon anytime soon to make that change other than time. And nobody likes that answer, but it's probably the correct one. Some things that you should be thinking about as an investor, especially you retirees, you need to rebalance or think about rebalancing your accounts. You know, risk management is especially important when we get in markets like the one we are in now. And so remember, if you are depending on the bonds in your portfolio or the safe investments in your portfolio to be there when you need them, if stocks sell off, you need to make sure that you have the appropriate amount in bonds, and that might require a rebalance. Make sure, everybody out there, you are on track to max out your retirement plan contributions and your health savings account contributions. You might have to make an adjustment because 2026, we saw higher contribution limits, especially for you super catch-up group. You can contribute a bunch in those. So make sure you're on track. Make sure you are actually diversified. We're going to have some segments about this later in the show. But, you know, a lot of you, because you have six different mutual funds, you think you're diversified, but they're all large cap U.S. growth funds. So that's not diversified. They all own the same stocks. Diversified in market cap, meaning size of the companies you own, but also globally. You know, Josh and I do these free retirement reviews all the time, and people are not diversified. And last year was a year diversification helped, and 2026 so far has really been a diversification year. And then lastly, and most importantly, check your beneficiaries on any account with the beneficiary designation, right? The last thing you want is for your money, if you die, to go to your ex-spouse. That's a really uncomfortable appointment for a life insurance agent or financial advisor. And then update your estate plan. You know, if your estate plan might be 10, 15, 20 years old, your life has changed. Make sure that you are reading what your estate plan says and all the things that your estate plan says, that those are still true and applicable in your life. Because, you know, kids grow up and people get divorced and all those things. So make sure you're checking out your estate plan or get one if you don't have one. All right. If you'd like to take one of us up on a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $750,000 of investable assets, you can call our office to get one of those meetings scheduled. The number here is 800-743-0988, or you can always go to our website and send us an email and just let us know you'd like a free retirement review. When we come back, we're going to talk about the first half of 2026 and how diversification worked, and ask you, are you actually diversified? So stick around.
Get your free one-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988. Connect to the Financial Focus radio show on YouTube or iTunes. Listen to past shows, get our bi-weekly e-news, and keep up to date on the market. You can also sign up for our e-newsletter on our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Let's get back to the show.
If you do want to sign up for that e-newsletter, Josh and I do a 5 or 6 minute video on the 15th and 30th of the month where we talk about markets and how they are affecting your money. You don't have to be a client to get added to our e-newsletter list. To get added, go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Send us an email. Just let us know you'd like to be added to the e-newsletter list, and that is the only thing that we will send you. So it is obviously 4th of July weekend, and a lot of people will be firing up the old barbecue. And it's going to be the Arbor Research Data Sciences did, they track crazy, stupid statistics, but it's always pretty funny. They looked at the cost of a 4th of July cookout for 10 people going back to 2006, actually. It's the most it's ever been since they've been keeping data. This is what I really can't figure out. They say that the cost of a 4th of July cookout for 10 people is $73.82. I don't know anybody that could have 10 people over and have a barbecue that would cost $73.82. But I guess maybe in places like Mississippi, that's what it costs. I don't know. That's up. Last year it was $70.92. And obviously, if you go back to pre-COVID, so 2019, it was $54. So obviously, we've seen a massive increase in inflation since before COVID. You know, the last 5 years we've had
that seems
essentially prices up 25%.
I mean, you're not eating beef, right? It's with all time.
I don't know. I think
beef.
You're having hot dog buns and that's it. Like, I don't know how you can have a barbecue with 10. Like, if this said like 2 or 3 or 4 people, even maybe.
Yeah.
But 10 people, like what?
No drinks. You're drinking water for sure.
Water, hot dogless hot buns without the hot dog in them. Like, $73.
Sounds a little fishy, just like the CPI.
Oh my! But the point is, the data went up from 54 to 73.
Yeah, no, there's no question, especially with the price of.
You sound know, like Jim Cramer this morning
high.
When he didn't like the jobs report. Oh, it's not right. That's like all the people that when the data is in their favor. There's one guy that really is good at this. When the data says what he wants, he loves it. But when the data doesn't, he thinks it's bunk. The Mag 7 stocks, which everybody had to own and everybody was sure, us included, that when these seven companies rolled over, that the market had no chance of going higher without them. Well, guess what? Collectively, the Mag 7 stocks are down 7% year to date as a group, while the other 493 stocks in the S&P 500 are up 14% on a year-to-date basis. So double the return. You hear about this broadening of the market. We are really seeing it. The biggest AI winners are now becoming the biggest losers as investors start to question the CapEx spend that these companies are making. And the beneficiaries of all of this spend are now going up. So what's crazy is, like, you know, these companies were generating tons of free cash flow. They are using all the free cash flow. They're borrowing money, issuing shares. And so they're now negative free cash flow. And they're spending it, you know, on building data centers and all these other things. And so these companies that are becoming the beneficiaries of the spend, meaning their earnings are growing, those stocks are going up, as investors, rightfully so, are questioning these companies that are spending all this money and if there's going to be a return on that investment. I don't know why it's just taking investors now to realize that. I think the threat of higher interest rates really brings into focus return on invested capital. I mean, that's always what should be happening. That's why I want higher rates, is because, you know, in a low rate environment, lots of uneconomical endeavors take place. And in a higher rate environment, capital allocation has to be much better. People only start businesses if they're going to be profitable, yada, yada,
well,
yada.
And it functions almost entirely like gravity, whereas, you know, the longer rates are, quote, normalized, the better capital allocation decisions ultimately have to be to justify them. So we want this return to normalization. And I think interest rates are performing that gravity-like function where, you know, we're starting to see that normalization. The longer it goes on, the better off we'll ultimately be.
Yeah, I mean, tech stocks, NASDAQ sold off pretty good, almost 5% in the month of June. With the chance that rates are going to be higher, you know, there's this repricing that's going on in markets, and we absolutely think it's good and are certainly beneficiaries of that, and so are our clients, which has led me to what I want to talk about in this segment, and that is, you know, obviously the first half of the year is over. You know, the end of the quarter was June 30th, and so I thought what we should do is talk about the asset classes, what did well in the first quarter of the year as it relates...
First
half of the year, as it relates to people's portfolio and the lessons that should be learned, and that, you know, diversification matters. So many of you are not diversified, truly diversified. Just because you have a financial advisor does not mean you're diversified. You know, Josh and I did this experiment with this big asset manager called BlackRock. And, you know, they shared with us what they think our client portfolios should look like. You know, they said, they would build these portfolios and show them to us. And we thought they were laughable, right? Because we didn't think they were diversified in a way that would make sense for us and our clients. And we have so far been proven right, because their so-called risk reducers added a ton of risk to our client portfolio. So if we look at just here domestically, the big winners have been small cap stocks. Any small cap index you look at, the most widely followed is the Russell 2000. But and we're going to do a segment on small cap stocks here coming up. We use a different index, but all small cap stocks are having a really good start to the year, up 20%+. The Russell is up 22. The one we use is up over that. So on a year to date basis, we are really seeing good outperformance from small cap stocks. And, you know, we don't see any reason for that to not continue unless we see rates move up significantly from here.
We'll talk about it more later when we have a dedicated segment to it, but it's really peculiar to actually see small caps continue their outperformance in light of fears around higher interest rates towards the end of the year. That's a complete contradiction to what we've seen over really since anything post-COVID.
And then we're also seeing outperformance from value stocks. So traditional blue chip names, we're seeing outperformance from value stocks up about 16.5%, 17%. The NASDAQ's having a good year, but the S&P is up about 8%. Growth, just large cap peer growth stocks are only up about 2%. And then, like I said, the Mag 7 is down about 7%. If we look internationally, emerging market stocks are doing the best internationally. They're up a little over 20%. International develops up about 8%. In the bond market, the aggregate bond index is still strong. It's in the longest bear market in its history. It's down about 1%. You know, we haven't seen a bear market this long in our country's history. And so long and intermediate dated bonds continue to struggle. And precious metals, this is REITs, I should say, are up about 9%. Precious metals, this is where we've seen the big rollover after a blockbuster start to the year. Gold's down about 7%. Silver's down 19%. So big rollover there. Crypto, we've seen a crypto winner. Bitcoin on a year-to-date basis is down 34%. Ethereum's down 50%. Obviously, we're seeing WTI crude up about 22%. And so, you know, the moral of the story is, when you look, we're still seeing some international outperformance. We're seeing outperformance down the market cap, and then owning the right bonds. Commodities have just been a disaster outside of oil. So,
but the drum that we should beat is, like, diversification has worked for going on a year and a half solid now. I mean,
worked really well
in 2025. It was, you know, domestic versus international stocks, but this year diversification across different size companies in the U.S. is really, really shining. And when we do these free portfolio reviews, the common characteristic is you own a bunch of the same funds that own the same exact things. They just have different names.
All right. If you want to be part of the show, give us a call, 877-670-7117, or email us. Go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. When we come back, we're going to tackle some of your emails, so be sure to stick around.
Sign up for our e-news today. Get the latest thoughts on the market every other week from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management delivered right to your inbox. The short 5 to 6 minute video helps you keep up with the market. You can always watch past videos on YouTube or on northwestquadrantwealth.com. Listening to Financial Focus Radio Show, where you get honest and actionable advice every week from the partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. Remember, you can always listen to past shows on iTunes or find us on northwestquadrantwealth.com.
Welcome back. Hopefully everybody is having a fabulous and safe 4th of July weekend. What's the plan for frickin' frack? What are they doing for 4th of July? Can they stay up for the fireworks? It's like 10 o'clock, isn't it?
Grayson made it last about year. 5 minutes of last year, so we'll see how he does this year. But pet parade for sure.
Oh, and yeah.
Don't forget the U.S. men's national team against Belgium on Monday night.
Wait, hold on. Before we get to the soccer, is the pet parade, is it supposed to be hot on... For the pet parade?
I mean, it starts so early. By the time you're done, it's hot, but...
It's not... You understand, it's not the pet parade, because your family, you had one dog and seven people, and that's most people in the pet parade. It's just a bunch of people walking with one dog.
Yeah, it's awesome.
No, it used to be like an actual pet parade, like where it'd be mostly pets and just one person walking a dog.
Well, they need to bring back the July 4th tradition, you know, sack races.
I can't believe
that
last year.
How is it still on hiatus for the 250th birthday of the United States? Come on.
Guess I'm on.
Come on, Ben Parks and Rec.
Yeah, but Josh is right. Belgium and our New York men's national team are going to play in Seattle on Monday at 5 o'clock. So sending good vibes. This
shout out to Ken Griffin of Citadel for covering the U.S. men's national team coach's salary. Bringing him from Argentina.
And didn't he just re-up? I think he just re-upped.
I don't know. Did he?
Yeah, I think he just re-upped.
It's just awesome that Ken Griffin's finances stuff like that. Good on you, Ken.
I mean, wouldn't you if you could afford it?
100%. It would be amazing.
I would decide who the Red Sox coach was going to be.
Yeah.
Pay him.
What a cool deal.
So 5.5 short months ago, this was the sort of common thread you heard out of Wall Street. The dollar's doomed. Gold and silver are going to go to the moon. If we fast forward to today, the dollar is up almost 8% from that period. Gold's down about 27% and silver's down 50%. Narratives follow prices far more than prices follow narratives. Remember that. And this is an age-old thing on Wall Street. Like when somebody, you know, Josh and I this week, we had a client sending me emails where he was really certain about a bunch of things. And I said, man, when somebody is certain about a bunch of things, I usually like to take the other side of that, because certainty in this business is the fastest way to lose money.
Well, and the thing we've been asked about precious metals so much, and yes, I mean, the performance has been really, really good over the last 10 years with that. We got to give credence to that, but
now when you consider 50% sell-off in silver.
Well, but when you look at it and you're like, you can't really reliably point to like why it's going to do well, because it doesn't really provide, you know, that hedge that you think it does when you think it's going to do it. It's entirely driven by narratives. And you know, the narrative as a result of the new Fed chair, you know, I think has maybe fundamentally changed. And, you know, that investment case predicated on a narrative, you know, is a lot different than it was at the onset of the year.
Certainly. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to own precious metals, make sure it's just a very small allocation to your account. Think of it as insurance. It's just you hope it never pays off is the idea behind owning precious metals. All right, let's tackle some email questions. We got an email from somebody named Ryan, and it was just addressed to Josh, so I'll let Josh answer it. Hey, Josh. That's how I imagine him asking you. Hey, Josh. My name's Ryan, and I had a question for the radio show. I would assume most of your audience is in the later half of their life. You're probably accurate on that one, Ryan. What would three things you would recommend to a younger person in their 20s that is in their career job? I currently have a heavy allocation to the raw side of my retirement through my company, just looking for extra guidance.
Whew, three things. Ryan and I know we've interacted in the past. I think that you should continue.
Oh, you know this guy?
Yeah, I think he's the son of an existing client that's in the latter half of there.
He's in his 20s. So.
Yeah, so, Ryan, continue down that path in the Roth. You know, compounded tax-free growth ultimately is a decision I don't think that you're going to regret later in your life. We survey all of our clients and ask them, you know, later, many, many decades past your stage, whether or not they would have contributed as much to pre-tax. And I think universally the answer is that they wish they had allocated more toward the Roth side of your portfolio.
Well, most of them didn't have that opportunity. Remember, the Roth's only
25 years old. Yeah. Second, save prodigiously in a taxable brokerage account past your Roth. I think that, you know, having optionality and liquidity in your life is something that, you know, you can't really forego. It's, you know, when we see all of our most successful clients, taxable accounts have been a really crucial component of their retirement portrait. Third, you know, I'd say, like, if you're eligible for an HSA, that's another thing that often gets sort of overlooked, and people spend, you know, healthcare expenses out of cash. You know, if you're part of an HD, HP, a high deductible healthcare plan, an HSA is available to you. Definitely contribute to that, because it ends up being triple tax free way later in your life. And if you can afford it, you know, spend your healthcare expenses out of cash flow and save the money in the HSA. It's another decision I don't think you'll regret decades from now.
So, Ryan, my friend failed to give you the most important thing in the financial plan. So this is number one by
that?
Far, and that is you have to get your emergency fund to a level that is at least 6 months worth of living expenses before you do any of those things, right? Because you never want to tap those.
Fair.
You never, because people always say, well, my emergency fund is my investment account. It's like, well, generally, when you need to tap your emergency fund, that means something not good is happening in the U.S. economy, which potentially, you know, you've lost your job. And that probably means stocks are down 30 or 40%. So emergency fund is the most important thing in a financial plan, whether you're Ryan's age or an old guy like me and Tim. You need your emergency fund to be there so that when you need it, it is there and you're not having to tap any of these other accounts. And so, the other things Josh said are certainly good, but the emergency fund is priority number one, whether you're 20 or 60, right, Tim? We got an email from Gary here in Bend. Gary says, I'm 64 and retired. My wife is 54 and still working. Whoa, Gary.
Good job.
Half the people I talk to take Social Security. We're going to get in so much trouble. I'm going to tell your wife to listen to segment three this week. Half the people I talk to say take Social Security and just invest it, and you'll make more than waiting until you get older. Others say that the tax hit isn't worth it because my wife still works. I've talked to a couple financial people and still get mixed answers. What is your guys' opinion? So this guy, it's the, you know, the take Social Security, invest it. Or wait till you're older.
Just got to find yourself a good growth mutual fund and get 12%. No. Well, I mean, we go through the data.
Josh is taking the bait.
We go through the data on this one all the time. 2/3 of men file at 62. You know, a lot of it is filed on the belief that Social Security, you know, and we're 6 years out now from the trust fund being depleted and the benefits are going to be cut. And that's what, you know, we don't really believe that that's an actual real fear. Taking it and investing it, especially while your wife still has earned income. I'm not sure specifically how much she made. I don't know that that was in the question, but
probably more than the $25,000 threshold.
I don't know that, you know, that's going to be something that from a tax perspective is really beneficial to you. You know, waiting each year, especially if you don't need the money, and getting that 8% growth in the payment stream plus the cost of living adjustment. You know, this year that COLA is going to be north of 4% most likely. That seems to us a deal that's too good to pass up.
And so, yeah, I mean, this is an easy one. Like, Gary, all your friends that say, you know, take it and invest it, do these people remember that the stock market does go down sometimes? And so, Gary, let's say you take it early, you take the tax hit, and then you invest it in the S&P, for example. Because you have to invest in stocks if you're going to beat the 8% that the government's guaranteeing you an increase in your income. And really, when you think about
it's 8% real.
It's 8% guaranteed income, which is actually a better return on the money that would be invested. So it is a no-brainer.
But it's an 8% real return because you're getting an inflation rider.
Right. But when you think about it, it's 8% increase in your income. So it's even more from if you compare it to a return in the stock market. This is a no-brainer. Anybody that's telling you that, including financial advisors, the financial advisors should lose their license and or their business for giving that advice. And you should run away from that other person. Stocks go down, people. Remember that. Stocks can go down. And when they go down and you've done this strategy, you're going to feel like a buffoon. And you would be right to feel that way. All right. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 877-670-7117, or email us, northwestquadrantwealth.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about the great small cap universe. So stick around.
Get your free one-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988. Thank you for joining Financial Focus Radio Show. Honest, transparent analysis brought to you every week by Tyler Simonis and Josh Finelli. Call the show anytime at 877-670-7117. We'll try to answer your question on the air in the following weeks. Now, back to the team from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management.
If you'd like to take one of us up on a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $750,000 of investable assets, call our office to get one of those meetings scheduled. The number here is 800-743-0988, or you can email us. Go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Just let us know you'd like to take us up on one of those free retirement reviews, and they will get you on our calendar. So 5,212 active U.S. stock funds started 10 years ago. That means actively managed U.S. stock funds, 5,212 of them started 10 years ago. Only 12 of those survived and outperformed their index on both a total return and invested dollar weighted return. Picking a winning fund manager in advance is essentially impossible, is what that tells you. So 10 years ago, 5,212 U.S. stock funds, active stock funds that were – these are men and women that were, you know, buying and selling securities to try to beat their benchmark. And after 10 years, only 12 of them survived and beat that benchmark. And so, you know, that, remember that 12 will keep changing over the next 10 years. It's not going to be the same 12. I bet none of the 12 in this over the last decade will be the same 12 in the next decade. And so this goes out to anybody picking actively managed mutual funds or exchange traded funds, but it also goes out to all you knuckleheads that are buying individual securities on your own, thinking that you're going to beat the market. You're just not over time.
And the problem with those 12 is they have to diverge so much from the index that there's going to be periods where their performance widely varies from what's going on in the market. And most people have a really difficult time staying invested through those periods, because they typically tend to, you know, they are quarters of dramatic underperformance, and then they end up selling out, and then the outperformance comes, and then the money flows into the fund later. So it's just really, really difficult to do. Why not take the easier, better option?
Peter Lynch was Rand Magellan was the best example of that, where he would just crush it, and then money would pour in, and then he'd have a bad year, and money would pile out. So, yeah, Josh is right. Just pick the low-hanging fruit, which is what Josh and I do. So DRAM stands for Dynamic Random Access Memory. It's the common system memory used in most desktop, laptops, and mobile devices. It allows your device to work with multiple programs at the same time, but it requires a continual power source to retain its data. So DRAM and the data that it's using, you know, like if you think about my computer right now, it's running a lot of different programs. And so it needs a ton of energy for that to be happening. Well, DRAM prices have spiked hundreds of percent in the last year, which means higher costs for data centers, smartphones, laptops, gaming consoles, and everything else that needs storage and memory. Tim Cook from Apple famously said, this is a 100-year flood. I mean, they, you know, when you look at DRAM prices in the last year, since 2025 are up 600%. You know, everybody talks about AI being deflationary. I don't know, man. I think a lot of these source these things that are happening in that space are going to prove to be inflationary. I don't know if the productivity gains we're supposedly going to see are going to outweigh the cost of all of these other things.
All of the personal devices are going to be way more expensive.
Well, Apple just raised prices.
Yep, all of that DRAM is getting sucked up into data centers.
And so we got to pay for it.
But, you know, memory is like notoriously cyclical. And our listeners over in Eugene will remember SK Hynix, the South Korean stock that is in that sort of memory trade that is up whatever 1,000% so far this year. There used to be a DRAM production facility out West 11th in Eugene that got mothballed, and they're making electric vehicles in there for a while. And, you know, now I think it's empty because that company failed. But the memory business has very, very changed. You know, the fortunes widely vary depending on where we are in the cycle. And I'm not so sure that cyclicality is over.
So, Mr. Finelli, let's talk about, I know you did this recently, but let's talk about an asset class that was certainly left for dead, and that is small cap stocks. So, Josh, define for everybody what is a small cap stocks, and then we can sort of talk about the two securities that we use in the small cap space and then make the case for the asset
class. The
one
thing that we've noted, you know, over the last few years is as the scale of market caps, you know, how big companies are has changed, so has the definition of small caps. You know, you're now,
technically it hasn't, but it really has for all intents
actual
purposes.
Funds, yeah. You know, when you look at what they hold and the average market cap of the underlying holdings, they've really, really changed quite a bit. We use, you know, IJR as our small cap exposure. That's built off of the S&P Small Cap 600 index.
We also use VBR.
Yeah, VBR is the other one, Small Cap Value. That's a CRSP index. They both have market cap, you know. VBR's average market cap is somewhere north of $3.5-4 billion. IJR's is a little bit lower, but still over $2 billion. So you're not really talking about what
VBR's is $9 billion now.
What traditionally would have been like a real small cap. So it, you know, when small caps get mentioned on CNBC or Bloomberg or everything else, they're almost always talking about the Russell 2000, which is, you know, 40% of that index is filled with companies that don't make money. So it's the junkiest junk. It only does better when, you know, we're in the midst of one of these speculative fervors a la 2021 or maybe a little bit earlier this year. But over the long run, you know, we really, really like IJR and VBR just because they have higher quality inclusion criteria. So, for instance, to be in the small cap 600, there has to be earnings viability. Company has to be profitable over its most recent four quarters to even be included. So it really gives it this quality tilt that sort of leads for outperformance. One of the reasons that, you know, we don't want to jinx it here, but yeah, small caps have traded almost entirely on rate cut expectations, you know, over the last few years, really since COVID. And, you know, what's really, really interesting and totally an affront to what we've seen over the last 5 years is as of late, even on days where, you know, markets are trying to price in expectations for a rate hike before the end of 2026, you're starting to see small caps outperform. And, you know, I wasn't managing money back in the early 2000s apart from my own, but when Tyler was there in the industry, like this is starting to very closely resemble the analog of the early 2000s and that tech telecom media bubble where, you know, on days where the NASDAQ or weeks where the NASDAQ's getting pummeled, small caps are actually trading higher.
Yeah, and the case generally for the asset class is, you know, lots more growth potential. It's obviously easier for a company with a $2 billion, $3 billion market cap to double from $3 billion to $6 billion than it is for a $1 trillion company to go from $1 trillion to $2 trillion. And so the potential is, they have a smaller cap stocks have a much larger runway to capture market share, which is a big deal. And then a lot of times they're acquisition targets, right? So a lot of times a big company will come in and pay a massive premium for a small cap stock. And so, if you look at the small cap premium going back a long time, small caps have done about 2% better than the S&P, but it comes with more volatility. So it can't be a huge allocation, but it's one that is way overlooked. You know, it's done really well for the last 18 months, and that is before the investing public has noticed it. So once that money starts to come in, these stocks can really go higher because it's a relatively small asset class, and so not much money can move it up a bunch. And so it's just one of these things when Josh and I do our free retirement reviews, almost nobody has explicit small cap exposure. We do in our portfolios, and it's certainly helped our performance over the last 18 months and something we think you should consider. If you want to take us up on a free retirement review, we can tell you about your asset allocation and if it does, in fact, hold any small cap. Give us a call, 800-743-0988. When we come back, we're going to talk about the big risk of a lost decade in stocks for retirees. So stick around.
Sign up for our e-news today. Get the latest thoughts on the market every other week from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management delivered right to your inbox. The short 5 to 6 minute video helps you keep up with the market. You can always watch past videos on northwestquadrantwealth.com.
Guitar George, he knows all the chords. Learning strictly rhythm, he